Blog Talk Radio.
I'm checking your smile, working your back like it's going out of style. Shake just a little bit faster, shake just a little now, girl. I'm dying to meet you, so let's mess around. Got an obsession with us getting down. Come just a little bit closer, I just need permission, so
July 15th, and you are listening to Ask Kathleen, and it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week, a wonderful summer, a wonderful day, and I welcome you and applaud you audience. I applaud you for having an incredible day, and we are 7 months in to 2012. Ronnie, can you believe that?
It's amazing. I was counting today. I was so excited, like 7 months in.
7 months in. Another year passing by. Oh, my goodness. Another year. Yep. So how are you, my co-host, my beautiful co-host and sister, Ronnie? Oh, how are you doing?
I'm wonderful. A little humid. It's a little humid, but it's good. Yeah, it's very sticky, icky sticky. But it's a nice, it's not super duper hot, so I don't mind.
I've been super duper hot.
You have?
I have. I have been like super duper hot.
And today, all day, or?
Yeah, today and yesterday was super duper hot. I find it
was hot.
Get dressed to go anywhere because I sweat like I don't know what the whole time while I'm trying to get dressed. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty sweaty. You know what I do? I drink ice water. Well, you know me and my ice water.
All night, all day.
24 hours a day I drink ice water.
I don't, and it doesn't matter what season it is either. You're still drinking ice water.
So I live on ice water. And even though they supposedly say that that raises your temperature because it boosts your metabolism, what do I care? I really don't care. That's how I stay cool. It was pretty hot yesterday. Today, this morning, it was hotter, but now since it rained a little bit, it cooled off.
Yeah, it was hot. And I went to 2 barbecues yesterday, so it was even hotter. Yeah, it was even hotter. But it was fun. Yeah, it was fun. I had a good time. So what's new? What's going on in your world today? What's happening? We just may as well jump right in there since we're doing an abbreviated version of Ask Kathleen tonight. Welcome, everybody, to Ask Kathleen. We're here every Sunday evening at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So, and I'm here with my fabulous co-host, my sister, Ronnie. And we are just feeling like we want to do an abbreviated version tonight. So we're going to be with you for 30 minutes. And unless something else intervenes, like Jerome calling it at 8:29. But anyway, we're going to do 30 minutes tonight, so we're going to be talking like the speed of light. So, Ronnie, what you got? Go ahead.
I had one big, and I wanted to mention it last week. So, like, this is a take back, a throwback, I'll say, from last week, because I didn't mention that Serena won Wimbledon last weekend.
This is her. Oh my gosh, that I don't believe we didn't talk about that last week.
Doing my applause because that's huge, huge. Another, that's her fifth title, and strong fighting like champion.
and then they won. She and her sister won the doubles, which they hadn't done in so long. So they hadn't played.
They hadn't done that. They hadn't played doubles in 2 years. And after she had that terrible health scare,
yeah,
where
Venus.
She had, the, you know, Serena with the blood clots, and then she had to have 2 foot surgeries. You know, so this is, I mean, this is a big deal to come back.
Venus isn't Venus coming back also from some kind of immune disorder? No,
yeah.
So to the Williams sisters from the Williams sisters.
Yay! This is huge. And she fought that girl down to the last because her name is Radwanska. She really wanted that title bad.
Yeah. Yeah. They all wanted it. All of them wanted it so bad, but I was so happy that Serena prevailed. So
and
happy.
And then she won another match against, I'm going to try to pronounce this name, Vandewiggy. Okay, so she won another match today in Stanford and regained her number one world ranking. Woo!
She's back. She's ranked number one again?
This is hot off the press.
I know that.
After having slipped to 175. Don't tell me you can't make a comeback. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years.
Sounds like Andre Agassi has had a comeback like that. You know, is Andre Agassi dropped down to, I don't know what. Let me see if I could call the tennis expert in for a minute. Hold on. Sean? You know this is like backdoor radio because people's mama's calling kids from the next from the next room. We want some sports update. This is your auntie on the phone. We want some sports update on Serena. Has anybody made a comeback like that to the number? Did you know she went back to her number one ranking?
Yeah, I knew that she went back to her number one ranking. She also won a recent tournament.
Be glad enough because you're on the radio.
Oh, sorry. She also won a recent tournament for the U.S. Open Series. I believe it was after she just won Wimbledon. Finals was on today at the U.S. Open. It's part of the U.S. Open Series. And in the U.S. Open Series, there are about 10 to 15 where all the players in there get points towards the U.S. Open.
Oh, okay. So, Ronnie, that's what you were just talking about that she won today.
Right. Is she going to the Olympics? Because that's what I saw a picture of her. I was wondering if she was going to the Olympics.
Actually, not sure if she's going to the Olympics. I haven't been able to check or follow that, but I do know that if she goes, she has a good shot at winning.
She's got a good shot at winning. Huge, big. This is huge. I'm just thrilled.
So what I wanted to ask you was, has anybody had a comeback like that since Andre Agassi? She dropped down to like 100 and something in her ranking, and now she's back to number one. I know Agassi did something incredible like that, but I didn't know if any other, you know, tennis players or women tennis players have dropped that low to come back to number one.
Well, to be fair, Serena, even though her ranking was that low, she had battled a few injuries. So it's not like she had ever been, you know, losing at a level that would have her 100 and something in the world. She just was battling injuries and focusing on some other stuff. But everybody knows when Serena's ready to play, there are very few people, if any, in the world that can stop her from winning a championship.
They say that serve of hers that kill you.
Oh, man. What did she have, 17 aces in that match, in that final match? It was, and she, I know they did a combination. They said they added up all the aces from all the women in the women's tournament, and she had more aces than that in the final game.
Wow.
Well, Serena can kind of be, I guess, the best comparison for, on a sports level, can be compared to someone like Tiger Woods or Michael Jordan, or like she completely changed the face of women's tennis for everybody. So you have to throw Venus in that conversation as well, because when the two of them came on the tour, however many years ago that was, the power that they added to the game just kind of switched the ability. Women's tennis was more of a finesse game, and you know, with all of the racket developments and the training programs that they went through, they kind of made the game a completely different animal, something completely different to watch. It's a lot more exciting to watch them, and you know you're going to get high quality tennis, sometimes higher quality, you know, than you've seen on the men's side.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's been some serious tennis, and I'm sorry that I can't believe I missed a match. And what's up with tennis? How come you can't watch the matches after they've been played? You know, there's like no
You can watch them online, can't you?
Oh, I don't think so. You can? I can't watch the finals match online?
Well, it's... Okay. You can, on the tennis channel, though, replay some matches. And I know for the finals, they played it on ESPN Live, and they replayed it on ABC. But it's kind of like any sport. You can't really watch it after it happens. There's no place where you can, you know, get it other than if they're replaying it on TV. So you can try and track down some places online. I'm sure they have it somewhere, but it's not like there's one central, I don't believe there's one central place where you can go and watch all the replays of matches.
Yeah, and that match with Federer was outrageous. That one I watched. Did you watch the men's finals, Ronnie?
I glanced by it. I didn't get to see the whole thing.
Yeah, it was
because that was the English guy that they thought was going to win.
Andy Murray.
The first time in 150 years. Was that same match?
Yeah, they haven't had a British person in the finals for close to a century, and they haven't had.
I said 150, so I overshot it, but.
Yeah, it's been like since the early 1900s the last time a British person has won the finals. So everybody was really excited, but it was also, to put that in perspective, like Federer hasn't won a major championship in something like 5 years now, or 4 or 5 years, something like that. So it was a lot of storylines. And Roger Federer was, I guess, 1 week away from having the all-time record for weeks at number one. It was previously held by Pete Sampras, and with this win, Roger Federer took it over for the very least a week, and then he's passed Pete Sampras for all-time leader. So that's just another record.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just another record to go on Roger Federer's resume. But, yeah, so either way, whoever won was going to set a record. But, you know, I really like Federer. Federer is...
I did too.
He's not your typical outgoing, like, superstar. He's very... very humble guy, very about his business, and no one in the game makes tennis look easier than Roger Federer.
Yeah.
So, you know, he works hard, and he's gotten a lot of slack because of his losses against Nadal, but let's be honest, everybody has lost against Nadal. And Djokovic was coming on as number one, and he got that big win against Nadal in the U.S. Open, so for Federer to beat Djokovic and then beat Murray, who's like been at the top of all of the major championships for the past couple of years, no one can say that he didn't deserve this, and he pretty much proved that even at 30, he can still hang with the top players in the world.
And it sounds so crazy to hear people say even at 30. even at 30, like, my gosh, it sounds like it's ancient, but it is ancient in tennis years, I guess.
Well, in tennis years, people start retiring around 30. I mean, this year, or lately, especially with the amount of really good athletes they have that are really young, I mean, you take a look at Nadal, and in order to compete with somebody like Nadal, you have to be in top physical shape. And so the reason that Agassi and Sampras were able to play so long was because Agassi was in great shape, and he retired, like, shortly after 30, and Sampras retired even sooner than Agassi did, but he had a great serve and volley game, and his serve was unstoppable, and his forehand was unstoppable. But the amount of, like, athletic prowess that you have to stay at the top of the game now is insane. But Federer is always in the right place at the right time, and he never really seems like he's working hard out there. So we say even at 30, a lot of players don't even make it to 30. You know, through injuries and the amount of pounding that tennis puts on somebody's body. But it's just a credit to him and how hard he works.
That's another credit to Serena. Come on. 2 foot surgeries, most people can't even just go back to their regular jobs and be comfortable, never mind put that kind of, you know, that kind of pounding and pressure on their body. It's amazing.
I can say that Serena and Venus are not focused enough on tennis to, you know, to give they don't give enough respect to the game because they do so many other things. And then you see them come back from these kinds of injuries, not just to hang out, you know, and win in the quarterfinals or, you know, lose after one or two rounds. They come back after, like, major surgeries and illnesses to win the championship, you know. It's
thank
like,
you.
Wow.
Well, to be frank, Serena is the best women's tennis player to ever touch the court.
Wow.
Over Venus?
Serena.
I said over Venus?
Yeah, definitely over Venus. It's not even a competition. Actually, for Serena, she is so driven as a person that it doesn't even matter that her focus isn't all in one place. Now, what they would like to do and what they say is that their mind isn't in it, but that's an inaccurate statement. Their mind is completely in it. It's just not solely in tennis. So when she steps on the tennis court, there's nothing else. When she goes to train for tennis, there's nothing else. But in the same hand, when she goes to do her other stuff, there's nothing else that she wants to be successful. So again, you have to equate her to a Michael Jordan or Tiger Woods as far as work ethic. Like, those guys also do a bunch of things. Michael Jordan didn't only do basketball. I mean, he left his middle of his career for baseball, to be honest.
That's right.
But, you know, Serena has changed the game so much that she probably won't be appreciated until after, like, long after she retires, as good as a player that she is. But she completely changed the face of women's tennis, you know, as far as what people are looking for and what people actually, you know, think that women can accomplish on the tennis court.
Well, you know, it's so funny because people were saying, oh, my God, they're sick of them. Why don't they go somewhere? It's time for them to retire. And I was like, excuse me, why should they retire? They're the best thing that has ever happened to the tennis game.
Yeah.
It is. They are.
And you know what? It's the same thing, like, if people were to say that Tiger should go retire, you know,
nobody would ever say that.
Tiger is for the sport because Tiger was winning all the time, and he was the only reason that people were watching the sport. But let's be honest, like, the USTA does not want Serena or Venus to retire because
right.
Love them or hate them, you're gonna watch them.
You're gonna watch.
Let's say, I mean, again, the top sports players. I mean, you know,
it's the best, and you're gonna watch. And even though I don't like him that much, but it's the same thing goes for that LeBron James guy. People want to watch. I hope that doesn't bring Jerome charging in. But anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
not
know.
The biggest LeBron James fan, but people love him and they want to watch.
I love him too. I like it. I like LeBron.
I don't like LeBron. Actually, that's not
true.
I don't like him as a player in the NBA, and that's no disrespect to him. Like, he's a great
player. Yeah, no disrespect. It's just that
but
he's just not one of my favorites.
He plays for a team that I just extremely dislike. And, you know, the way that he left the way that he left Ohio wasn't the best, but you know, he's a young kid. But he went to Miami, so as a Knicks fan, there's no way that I'm actually gonna like that, and there's no way that I'm gonna root for him as a player. But he's a really good guy. He has all of his stuff together. He doesn't get in trouble. He's actually a very good guy.
And he's an excellent player.
And he's an excellent player. He's one of the best players to ever play the game. So those are the type of things that you really can't deny as far as him. And then going back to Serena again, you know, she doesn't get in trouble. She does a lot of work in the community. She does all these great things, but people are gonna love to hate her because she wins.
Haters
so.
Always gotta hate anyway. So, you know, that's another thing. I have to just say that this has really, I've been charged about this for the whole week because I couldn't believe that I didn't remember to mention it last week when she won. And it's just like, I watch the news and everything. I didn't see a thing about it.
It was on the news.
Yeah, it was on the news. It was a bunch of places. You know, her coming back and her winning and the story. They just don't spend as much time with her. And I think with her, especially because she's been around so long and she's been at the top so long, and you know all the people that have actually not liked the way that the Williams family has gone about stuff, and she has a different personality than Venus. Maybe if it was Venus, it'd be a little bit different. But that personality is the personality that drives her to be so great. And
it is. Did you see that father was with them at the game?
I mean, let's be honest. Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant are absolutely great players. As human beings, they're not nice guys.
Right.
They're not nice guys. But with guys, get away with it a little bit more. Because Serena's a woman, you know, it's a little bit different. People are going to say that she shouldn't be like that, or that, you know, they're going to come after her in a whole bunch of different ways. But like I said, the way that she's going to be truly appreciated after she retires. It's going to take some time for people to actually realize how much she changed the game. But
if she's listening tonight, she knows that we love her and we don't have to wait until 2087 to realize that she changed the game. She changed the game and we were on it. We were dead on it when she started and we're still on top. And we're charged. We're all Team Serena. Yay! And Venus.
Thank you, Sean. We know you're busy. Love you. Thanks for the sports update. We'll have you back next week, even though you never want to come back without me calling you back. Yay, Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
I always have to twist his arm to get him to come hang out, but he's got so much information, you know, when it comes to sports. And stuff is just like crazy. I told him he should have his own show on ESPN Radio.
I know. I really didn't want him to run off because I wanted to ask him what he thought about the Barclays Center opening in September and the New Jersey Nets now becoming the Brooklyn, whatever they're going to be.
No, I don't know if I can get him to come back, but let's see. I'll do another, you know.
Because I had to talk about that. Jay-Z's opening the Barclays Center, and that's going to be the home of the New Jersey Nets, and Jason Kidd is going to be playing.
I know. Okay, so here's one more, when it's home-style radio, when the people are calling their kids from across the room, Sean, can I have two more minutes, please? Only on Homestyle Radio. You know Steve Harvey couldn't do this, right? So,
no. Oh, no, yes, Steve Harvey could. Some of the crazy stuff that I've heard him do, this is mild and very calm and very, yeah.
Okay, he said you can have 30 seconds.
Okay. Is he there?
Yes, he's right here.
Sean, go. What do you think about the Barclays Center opening, the new home of the Brooklyn, and what are they going to be called?
The Brooklyn Nets. Some awesome place over right down Atlantic Avenue in the middle of Brooklyn, a bunch of shopping centers over there. It's a great venue, but I will not be rooted for the Brooklyn Nets.
Is that what they changed the name to, the Brooklyn Nets?
I spent two, Don't get me wrong. When Jason Kidd was down in New Jersey taking them to back-to-back finals, I thought it was great. They didn't have a team around him. Jason Kidd did that by himself. I mean, he made, like, Kenyon Martin and Richard Jefferson look like Hall of Fame players, and they went to other teams and weren't as successful. So, you know, as a New Yorker, it's over in Brooklyn, and I think it's good for the city. But to be honest, I'm a Knicks fan, and I will be a Knicks fan, and nothing is going to change that.
I just wanted to know what you thought about the venue. And my second question is, why did the New Jersey Nets move? What was wrong with New Jersey? And now who's playing for New Jersey? Do they have a team?
New Jersey does not have a team. But let's be honest, they did not have a team when they were in New Jersey either.
Like the Clippers. Like the Los Angeles Clippers. Okay, so Jason Kidd was everything when he was on the – because I watched the New Jersey Nets play when Jason Kidd was on it because he was everything.
Yeah, but New Jersey fans root for the Knicks. They don't root for the Nets. So it didn't make any sense for them to be there anyway. It's kind of like it's the same reason why the Giants and the Jets play in New Jersey, but they're the New York Giants and the New York Jets.
Right.
They play out there, but, you know, if you're in New Jersey, if you're in the southern part of New Jersey, you root for all the Philly teams. If you're in the northern part of New Jersey, you root for all the New York teams. So they were pretty much a New York team anyway, or a, you know.
Oh.
They're just trying to increase their fan base. So all
I just wanted to know about the venue, too. Is it beautiful? Is it going to be beautiful? Is it going to be gorgeous? Did they put in a parking lot?
I mean, yeah, the venue's going to be great.
It's gorgeous. I went over there.
Yeah, the venue's going to be great. It looks great. You know, it's going to be finished relatively soon. Jay-Z is doing an opening concert series over there.
On the 28th through the 30th of September. I would love to go see that.
Thank you, Sean. We don't want to abuse our time with you. And I know Jerome is like hanging on. I know he wants to talk to you because he's the sports man. So Jerome, are you there? Your mic has been muted. I was surprised I didn't hear you like screaming. You've been so cool.
Oh man, no, I had you on mute. Hey.
Sean is still here for a second. He said, open up and talk to Jerome.
I know. What's up, Sean?
Not much. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. Hey, Ronnie.
Hi, Jerome.
Anytime we started
on LeBron James, he was going to be like, wait a minute, here they go again.
Sorry, what is
the New York is tearing up LeBron.
Jerome, you want in on the conversation before Sean leaves? He's got like another minute. He's only hanging out because we opened your mic.
No. I'm good. I was just listening. You know, I'm not all of, you know, up here, we're kind of still all Knicks fans too, so I don't know about the Brooklyn thing with the Nets. And by the way, nobody has any respect for New Jersey. It's just more parking over there. That's all that was.
I can't argue with him there. And again, like all the southern part of New Jersey, they're all close to Philly, so they all root for the Philly teams. And,
right.
You know, all northern part of New Jersey, they all root for the New York teams, the Yankees and, you know, the Yankees, the Giants, Jets, whatever the case may be, but...
Yeah, it's just a New York suburb. That's all.
Pretty much.
Everybody knows that about Jersey. Even people live in Jersey know that.
No, Jersey doesn't have a baseball team.
And no football team.
They don't have a football team. They don't have any teams out there.
Wow.
What happened? They just got stripped. They have nothing?
Yeah, they haven't really had
anything.
New Jersey Devils are
out
there. Okay. Yeah, just the hockey.
Wow.
So that's it.
I didn't even realize that till just now. I was like, that's right. They don't even have a baseball team.
No, they don't have any teams out in New Jersey. Again, because, you know, all their loyalties. Well, actually, them being a suburb of New York, or in the southern part of New Jersey's case, a suburb of Philadelphia, kind of means that all the people travel out there. You know, they travel into New York to work, or they travel out to Philadelphia to work. So when they're creating their allegiances, they go with the major team in the area. And the big market teams are, to be honest, they're not going to be in New Jersey. They're going to either be in New York or Philly. So it's kind of how it works.
Right, because a major city in Jersey would be what, Newark?
Yeah, and that's
Trenton.
That's just not happening.
And that wait,
and
Cape May.
To be fair, like those aren't bad cities, but
they're small.
When you're competing with New York and Philly, two of the biggest cities, you know,
that's true.
In the world, two of the most famous cities in the world, at the very least.
Right.
Then you're gonna have trouble if you're, you know, Newark or Trenton.
And that close too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a breaking news.
What's your breaking news?
Jason Kidd was arrested for drunk driving.
Who?
Jason Kidd.
Oh, you knew that?
Yeah.
Thanks, Sean. See you later. Jason
Kidd.
That was today.
Is that because he's coming to... Okay, now the applause is not for Jason Kidd, okay? It's for Sean. I just wanted to be clear. So he got drunk because he's coming to New York? Is that what happened?
I don't know. And then what happened? They traded Jeremy Lin? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, we're not kidding. Not kidding.
Oh, they didn't match his contract?
No.
Oh.
He's going to go to Houston Rockets? Are you kidding me?
See, all of this is new to me.
Yeah.
$25 million.
Yeah, I was surprised because I thought he was great here. I don't know. What's that about?
Well,
it's a breaking news. It's a breaking news story. Oh my God!
They said Jeremy Lin's. Okay, this is from ESPN. Jeremy Lin's just not worth the money. So I don't know about that. But that's So they let him go.
Well, he's not worth the money on the court. No.
Yeah, so they said, and they're talking about the offer with Houston, saying that it was ridiculous, you know, so I don't know. But, hey, they made the offer, he's taking it, he's out. Wow.
Well, okay, so.
He can always come back.
Why everybody is mad at LeBron James. NBA basketball is a business, and Jeremy Lin's jersey is second behind LeBron James's jersey in China. And so the NBA wants nice little ambassadors to the league, and Houston Rockets want to increase their attendance. So they said with Jeremy Lin playing so well, New York City had more Asian people attending the games, and it was more hype. So it's more money for them. On the court, they were just saying, you know what, when the teams, Darren Williams played, when they speaking of the Nets, when they played the Knicks, and when Jeremy Lin had his hype, Darren Williams just shut him down. Then when he played Miami, he couldn't do anything with them. Those guys are that much better than Jeremy Lin. So he's a good player, but being worth the money was how much money they were making externally because he was there, not because he was adding a lot of value on the court. A lot of people were hurt and stuff, so you know they're not going to match it if they had to spend money on somebody else.
I don't know, and that
was my thing about professional sports. They treat it like a business, and we ask the players to be fans of their own team.
Right.
Right, and so Jeremy Lin left. He didn't have to sign that deal, but nobody's going to say to Jeremy Lin, I can't believe you went to the Rockets.
No.
They're like, man, you better get that money because ain't nobody going to pay you that. He got cut by, what, about five teams last year?
Right,
so,
he got $25 million is a big deal compared to sleeping on his brother's couch.
Right, right, which again, he had a good probably 8 or 10 games and then got hurt. But that's nothing in the pros. They play 82 games. So, I mean, he made out like a bandit, though. And I understand the hype and stuff, but as far as playing 10 games in the pros and then getting so much money, when everybody in the league passed up on you last year, it was a remarkable story, but at some point you're going to want to get some value for him being there. So New York, I think, wanted to keep him for sentimental reasons just because it was going to put more people in the stands and they were going to sell more merchandise.
But let me ask you this. You said that Houston brought they paid him 25 million dollars
to go to Houston because they want to increase their attendance at the games?
Yeah, well, Houston is kind of an international city. Remember they had Yao Ming, and so they enjoyed the international coverage that they were getting in Houston, and they were saying just having him there is going to give them a little bit more in their market for whatever Houston was planning. So they have some value for him in the market because they're about selling more popcorn and T-shirts and uniforms. So they get royalties off of that stuff. So Houston had some value for him. New York just said they just raised the price too much, but
yeah, they did.
You know.
They were going to give him 15, and they raised it to 25. They're like, "See ya, son," as they say in
Brooklyn. Right. They said, "We'll see you when you cut him in about a year and a half.
Yeah.
We'll get him back." I'm sure they were gambling on that.
That's good for him, though.
No doubt. No doubt. So, I mean, he's in an idea like situation. For a person that's dreaming to get a big payday. I mean, do you know Michael Jordan had a $9 million contract, like, a year for, like, his first, I don't know, probably five or 6 years in the league? I mean, he was the biggest rip in sports history.
Who?
His value to how much money he literally got paid to play basketball, probably, like, the eighth or ninth highest player in that league.
Jordan, you mean?
Michael Jordan, yes.
You think he should have gotten more, like as much as LeBron James got?
Oh, please. Michael Jordan was getting paid so little money that when he retired the first time, they paid Tony Kukoc. He was the highest paid Bull ever when he came in to play for the Bulls. Now, I don't know if you remember, Mike retired, won 3 NBA championships, and they brought the white kid in from Croatia, and they made him the highest-paid Bull ever. That's why they were having problems with Scottie Pippen and Rodman. And so when Michael came out of retirement, he wanted to play for the Knicks because he and Patrick Ewing and Barkley are really close, but he and Patrick Ewing were friends, and he wanted to go to the Knicks. So he did something what he thought was outrageous, and he asked them for $30 million for 1 year. And he said, "If I knew they were going to give it to me, I would have asked for more money." He wanted to leave. He thought he was being unreasonable, but they saw the revenue that they were getting from selling out every arena in the NBA, from winning the NBA championship. They finally gave Mike $30 million because they disrespected the amount of money he was making for years. He was very much underpaid.
Well, you know, well, see, the reason why a lot of us, the lay people, you guys are more, you know, intense and more informed as far as what goes on in the inner workings and, like you said, the business aspect of those sports. But we just look at the fact that he was the greatest player. He had a good shiny head. And you know how girls are. We don't know. We don't realize that he's not getting paid the way he should be getting paid. And I didn't realize it until Kobe Bryant came along and got that outrageous amount of money out of high school. And then LeBron James came along and got that next outrageous amount of money out of high school. And we realized that Michael Jordan wasn't getting paid from the league. He was getting paid from the endorsements.
Right.
That's what really, really upped his quotient. You know, but most of the sports fans don't really see that. They just see the fact that he's so rich. We don't realize that the league wasn't paying him the way they should have been paying him.
Right. But and you got to remember, LeBron had a pretty good contract, but he didn't make his money from Cleveland either. He had like a $100 million Nike deal before he signed his NBA contract. His money was external.
Yeah, so, that's true. That
and,
was.
And
I
when
thought,
he went to Miami,
you know, when,
he took a
when you think about it, you think it's the money coming from, like when LeBron came out, the first time we ever heard of him, we heard LeBron James $100 million. But you don't realize that that money is coming from the endorsement company rather than the NBA. But he still got, I mean, that's still a lot of money. So you,
well,
it was because he played sports that he would get that money.
Okay, let me help you with this, Ronnie. Let me tell you why that's relative. Because I just talked about punitive damages and how people see individuals getting money and they have heart attacks for this. Here's the deal. Michael Jordan signed his Nike contract, right? He made something like $3 million a year with his Nike contract. When he signed his very first year, Nike sold about 200,000 pairs of shoes, like total 200,000 pairs of shoes. The first year of Air Jordans, 1.2 million pairs of shoes. The next year, about 3 million pairs of shoes. Million. Michael still only got $3 million a year. They never gave him more money. Everybody at Nike got rich, and Michael never got any more money. So as the executives at Nike are getting bonuses for sales and all of this, those guys are making like $50 million, $100 million, getting bonuses, Christmas bonuses, all this. This kid gets $3 million a year, and they're marketing on his back, and we don't know who any of those guys on Nike's board is or who
his
management.
Why didn't he had no attorneys to fight for him?
You can't. He signed his contract. Michael kind of believed that he should honor his contract. Because that's how black folks are generally. So
the contracts are made to be,
like that would have been like, all right, we
aren't
need
they to made to be amended?
There was nothing you can do unless the company decides that that's okay.
Wow, huge.
Right? They didn't. So honestly, what happened is that once they created the Air Jordan logo, that Jumpman logo, Michael owns that logo. He got them back though.
Well, all right then.
That logo. So he was like, "I'll take my logo, and we will go to Adidas." And so
he owns the Swish.
All the Air Jordans now, Michael gets royalty off of all of those shoes, but he didn't get the royalty off the shoes before.
Not the
Swish.
He just
had a $3 million a year.
You're not talking about the Swish, are you? You're talking about the Air Jordan.
I'm talking about the Air Jordan, that Jumpman is with him jumping in the air with the box.
Oh, that's huge.
Looking like the Mercedes Benz logo.
Yeah, that's huge.
Michael Jordan owns that one.
That's huge.
Okay, well, let me jump in if I might.
Okay.
What would happen with, Ronnie, you're asking about the contract. What would happen, and I don't know what year, you know, Jerome, you could probably jump in on this, but anyway, I'm assuming that when Michael first signed with Nike, even he might not have known that he was going to become the figure that he is. That said, even myself as a, you know, I'm not one of the, you know, patent attorneys, contract attorneys for athletes and so forth for endorsements, but even in my limited knowledge of doing contracts on that vein, you always will make the contract in such a way, if Michael is my client, there's got to be some kind of a clause in that contract that is going to allow him to renegotiate in the event that, you know, so not that you want the contract to necessarily end, but give it some breathing room so that if the kinds of dollars and so forth are being made on these shoes, that he has an opportunity to renegotiate that contract or to come in and, like, you know, have an opportunity to get royalties on the shoes. Or something else that will protect him in the event that all of a sudden it blows up. Because you bet your sweet bippy that if something negative were to happen to Michael, that they wouldn't be ready to pull that contract immediately, which means that Nike's attorneys have something in the contract that protects them in the event that something, you know, that Michael gets drunk and does something crazy or whatever, like what they do with all athletes, what they did with Tiger Woods when, Buick, when Buick pulled the endorsement from Tiger Woods and all these other athletes that have the, Chris Brown, when they pulled his endorsements and all the things that they're able to pull. Who was it, Rihanna? Did they pull Rihanna's L'Oreal endorsement?
No, she didn't get pulled. But Chris,
oh, okay,
they
were talking about it.
Oh, it's Got Milk? They took it.
Right. So all those things, they have a protection in, you know, clauses in their contracts that allow
them
to terminate those contracts in the event of. And so for the protection of the athlete,
you want to have something that protects them as well, dollar-wise, figure-wise, in the event that they go from selling 200,000 shoes a year to something crazy like millions of shoes per year based on the brand alone. And that brings, you know, that if we can have that conversation going all the way across the board, just like we talked about this, Ronnie, several times with hip-hop, when they were talking about Cristal and all the, and Timberlands and all this other kind of stuff in their songs, but they weren't making a dime on the fact that they were mentioning these brands in their songs, but yet it would cause the brand name to, you know, skyrocket, and they're running out to buy Timberlands. And I don't know, Cristal was a whole other thing because that was the whole French market that they didn't want them to mention their names and all that, but that's a whole other deal. But you get my point.
Yeah, well, I got to inject right here. A gentleman that says he created the Rockefeller logo for Jay-Z, Rockefeller Records, the Rockefeller Inc. I don't know if it's an Inc., but Rockefeller, anyway. He's being sued for $7 million in royalties because he created that logo in 1995 or something like that. It says he hasn't received royalties.
But what? So you don't get. I mean, I have a graphic designer. She's not gonna get royalties on any logo she creates for me. What?
Doesn't that some? That sounds crazy.
My logo is mine.
Yeah, people. But I mean, you know, people want to sue. They want to sue for whatever. And I guess he figured by now, because Jay-Z now is with the Universal. I think he's with the He started out of his trunk, Rockefeller, right? And then he did build his own Rockefeller brand. But then when he went to Live Nation, and now he's with Universal something or other, I don't know. Anyway, a lot of, you know, corporation upon corporation upon corporation. And I guess this guy is probably still, like, creating logos around the neighborhood. And that's a Ronnie-ism, so please don't anybody get offended. But I'm just saying, if you're going to come out of the woodwork in 2012 over a logo that you created in 1995, then that means, you know, that you're thinking I should at least get something for it. He may give him something, you know, if he created a logo and he can. And there's a contract involved, but I don't see how he's going to get $7 million if there is no contract, if they were sitting around and said, oh, I like that.
is it the logo or was he a part of the business? I mean, you know, that's different. He
says he's the logo.
And if he owned the logo and he was letting him use it, you know, there's some dynamics that would need to be clarified. But just for when you hire somebody to do a graphic design for you, unless part of the contract says that they're going to get royalties based on the use of the logo that they create, you know, or there's some kind of bartering arrangement, you never know, because these guys were doing a lot of this stuff before there was a whole lot of money on the table. So you never know what they may have bartered. And so, you know, it depends on what their contract is. So let me retract what I said earlier. Based on what their contract was determines whether or not he actually has rights, any rights to it or not. But just, you know, I don't want people to think that they can't hire somebody to design a logo for them because forever they're indebted to the person who designs the logo. That's not necessarily true. It depends on how you draft your contract to determine whether or not something like that is possible.
Well, they say he owes him for creating the logo.
Yeah, I would say he's going to lose that. Like, you can't, you know, see, the thing is, enough has logos made over the years. And I'm a programmer, right? And so here's the problem, is that when I worked for an insurance company, and I don't know if I've told you the story before, you know, I actually designed New York State's electronic birth certificate system, the internet-based one. I actually designed that, right? I was working for this company, and I was the only programmer who did it. So I did all the specs with the Bureau of Women's Health and all of those guys, and I designed those screens.
Wow.
Jerome, you're saying that you designed the electronic online New York State Registry birth certificate
system. Birth certificates for hospitals, yeah. I know, you know, it'll just be another little known Black History fact, but here's the thing. I was working for a company that paid me to program a form, but I can't copyright it. I was getting paid to do that. So when you go to a graphic artist and you say, give me some specs for a logo, and they design it, they can't say, you're renting this from me. You either paid them for it or not. So if you see somebody else's logo, you can buy it from them. That's different. But you pay somebody to do a job, and if they're technically an employee or they bought it, you can't claim, since it was my own works, you know, as a programmer, we had to sign those disclaimers. I was just talking to a friend about that actually yesterday, saying that if I packaged an electronic, that whole system, and went to the state of Montana and sold it to them, I'm sure that they'll probably say that I couldn't use it, but I did it out of the top of my head. I'm a programmer. It wasn't that I copied somebody else's stuff. I created it. So that's problematic, and I know how that goes, and I've debated that for years as a programmer, just working for insurance companies and other companies, that when you program something, it's like music copywriting. You know, Prince had this problem where when you create something off of the top of your head, you write a song, When Doves Cry, and Warner Brothers ends up owning it because they're paying you to record an album, that's problematic. But that's how gangsters corporations are anyway. You're an employee.
Yeah. Yep. That's right.
So speaking of that, and professional athletes, they treat them like employees, and we as fans act like they owe us something. They're individuals. They break their foot, they are out of there. You know, they don't care. So anytime we say, you know, here's what we should do, we have problems with that. I think it's a sense of community and separation that we have all at the same time. Long as we don't know the person getting rich, we say, oh, that's nice that they made a lot of money. But once we find out who he is, and especially if they're black, we go, oh, well, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like nobody cared about how much the Chicago Bulls made when Michael Jordan was there. They cared that Michael Jordan made that much money. Are they crazy? You know how much money they got? The NBA should have been paying Michael Jordan royalties. Every arena he played in, they sold out.
Everyone. Every single one.
Yep.
It was amazing.
I know, Kathleen, you said you should have put some clauses in there, but, you know, at that time, you know, the only players who actually got royalties off of their uniforms sales in professional sports was Deion Sanders, who had a really good deal to do that, Derek Coleman, who played for the Philadelphia 76ers and played for Syracuse University, Michael Jordan, and there was one other, I can't even think of it. So if they bought
Magic,
they had a deal with
Magic,
the NBA and the NFL, that if their jerseys were sold, they got a percentage of royalties. But the athletes can't do that. The teams own them. So the teams get the royalties, not the individual players. It's very rare that the players can cut such a deal.
I did think Magic too, Kathleen.
I thought it was Magic.
I knew I was missing like a couple of people, but I remember that one year.
Yeah.
I saw a news story on it, and it was just those guys at that time. Magic wasn't playing at that time.
Oh.
But I'm sure
there
was people
done?
Before and after who had those deals. But during the time that Michael Jordan was playing, there was like five major athletes that had got royalties off of their uniform sales from their respective sports.
Maybe
probably Brett T or somebody.
That's a good segue about the uniforms. Kathleen Wood and Jerome, did you guys hear about the big hoopla do over the Olympic uniforms that were made in China? What a mess.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jerome, you talked about that on Thursday, didn't you?
I think we did talk about the fact that Ralph Lauren designed them. So it was an American company, I guess, Ralph Lauren. But
everything was constructed, and all the fabrics and all the everything is constructed in China. So they're saying, well, it's too late now. It's already done. And if we could redo them, there could be a few we could do, but we couldn't, you know, have them done in the U.S. So we could only make a few, or we could only make the men's, and so a company steps up and said, listen, we can have them done. A company here here in the area said we can have them done before the Olympics start. So I'm waiting to hear what happens. Because they don't want to spend the money.
Senator Schumer said there's a company in Buffalo who said they can guarantee
that's
that
right.
They'll get
Buffalo,
done.
That's what I mean. I knew it was local. I mean, to me, if you're in Buffalo, that's Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah, it's New York. Yep. They said they can get them done.
So the United States.
And so what Ralph Lauren said was, we'll make sure the next time in 2014 that we have them made in the U.S.
The United States team, Olympic team uniforms are made in China.
Well, you
by Ralph Lauren.
Right.
That's a disgrace.
Ralph Lauren, where is he from?
New York.
He's U.S.
Oh la la. Oh, I need a
U.S. company.
I need a crazy sound effect, Jerome.
You do.
No, you know what though? I have to go. Yeah, you do need a crazy sound effect, but
you
I
need
have
to sound like Lurch. You remember Lurch?
Well, here's the biggest problem with this. It's just like we talked about, like deferring stuff, like of what we want to be upset about. There should not have been any way in heck that you represent a country, and the stuff that you made, you're in the richest country in the world, and you can't even get your stuff made in the same country that you're representing. Right, that is sickening and sad, but at the same time, it shows how we don't hold capitalists' feet to the fire. Because they said since we're getting the uniforms made and we're private, we can get them made anywhere we want to. That was their initial response, right? We had the contract, we're a sponsor, so we as capitalists can get them made anywhere we want to.
That's just wrong.
Right.
Ralph Lauren's from the Bronx.
That's
from the Bronx.
That's exactly the fight we're having in the presidential race.
What's that?
Right? That we get to outsource. The question is, rich people think they can do whatever the heck they want to and make poor people pay. Every time we talk about something, especially politically and in Congress, everybody and their mama want to go to war, but the only people going to war to fight are people who can't pay their way out of getting out of it. It's always been that case in this country. If you notice that, the people who want to fight won't even pay the veterans when they come back.
Right.
You know, we don't need a VA. We can't keep giving out food stamps. People need to work. I know you hurt, you got mental illness or whatever, but you got to get over it. That's what we do to people who fight for wars that they didn't create. So So the whole thing, I know we had a lighthearted subject, but at the same time, it is very symptomatic of what's going on with our psyche.
I don't think that's a lighthearted subject, that the fact that they outsourced those uniforms. That's serious business. First of all, Ralph Lauren is a huge designer, huge. He's on the same level as Chanel and all that. So it's not a light thing. And the fact that we have a big deal with China and the way they, you know, how they treat us in the trade world.
Right, but look at it like this. And I'm saying it's lighthearted because that's not making a big deal on the news. Right? Because you would think it would make a big deal on the presidential.
I thought
because
it was. I heard it 100 times.
Huh?
I heard it 100 times. I did. They were making a big deal out of it.
Well, I guarantee you it'll be swept under the rug because the issue is always, as American companies go, that they're a sponsor, so since they're essentially giving them the uniforms for free, they get to pay for them any way they want to, and they need to use cheap labor to do it, apparently, because it was cheaper. But like I said, it has always been an issue where people having these Chinese issues of they're doing things better than us and they got education that's better, but their government is paying for everything. It's a communist country. Of course they're going to outbid any company that they want to outbid because they have the money from the nation backing them. I don't think we look at China in a proper context.
You know, I think the president has been, but nobody else listens to him. I hear him talking about it all the time.
No. Well, we talked about basketball, right? So Yao Ming paid for the Houston Rockets. Do you know he paid 80% of his salary when he went to taxes?
Yao Ming?
Yao Ming.
Wow.
Yeah. So his big NBA contract, 80% went to the government.
Whoa. Back that up a minute. Say that one more time.
80% of his salary in the NBA went to China.
He wasn't an American citizen?
So wait a minute. Hold on, Ronnie. So you're saying, let's say, for argument's sake, for those who are not mathematicians out here, let's say he made $1 million in 2011. 800,000 of those dollars went to the Chinese government?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your math is good.
not my math,
their
math.
I don't mean to be so flip about it. Yeah, the math works out really well. That's 80%.
So he had to, and you, initially, and the first time you said that, you said he gave. You're not saying that he's giving it to them for a donation because he's so happy to be a
Chinese. No. They're 80% taxed.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that for the record. I rest my case.
Right. I mean, like I said, it's extreme, but when you start talking about other countries in the U.S. and how we interact with them, just because as a businessman you can cut a deal with a country and you can make things cheaper, you're still selling out your own nation because you're not feeding people here to do a service that's for their own benefit.
I don't follow. You're not feeding people here. I don't follow. What is
right.
It?
Well, remember the saying that, you know, other communities circle their dollars better than black folks, so for every dollar that a black community has, it actually,
yes,
seven of them go out of the community and only three stay, kind of thing. Well, it's like that economics in the bigger picture is that if the U.S. is getting federal tax breaks, right, to have
uh-huh.
the company, then you're getting local tax breaks because you are hiring people. And then you
right.
get state tax breaks, and then you start purchasing with the dollars that you save in your tax breaks materials from foreign countries. We're not recycling our dollars because what is it actually buying us? You shouldn't get a tax break from me since I pay taxes. You can't get a tax break from me and then spend it someplace else.
In another country.
Well, I love this argument because I worked at this company. I just thought about this. And this white guy goes to this black woman who's working there. Now, she and I on our floor, out of probably a couple hundred people, are only two black people on our floor. So the company has roughly 0.05% black people in the whole country, but a company. But she and I are the only ones on the floor. So I go to her desk, and this guy is convincing her about a company having affirmative action. And she's looking at me, and he says to her, "Wouldn't you feel better about affirmative action if people knew that you got your job because it was your merit and not somebody adhering to affirmative action?" So I wouldn't say anything. And she said, "I know you have something to say." And I laughed, and I stopped her, and I said, "Well, I could say something. Would you like me to say something? Because that's stupid, right?" So I let her befriend him, but in him befriending her, he was only a temporary. He was only a temp. And he was trying to make her feel bad about being there, saying, "Yeah, we don't need affirmative action because I'm better than everybody else," right? That was the argument. Now, here is what I said, if you're not following this. If in this country we have 15% black people and we pay taxes, right, and you have a company that gets tax breaks, that means black people are paying for your tax breaks. If you don't have 15% black people in that country, in that company, you're not hiring fairly, so you can't have the tax breaks. Black people can't subsidize companies and don't receive a benefit. That is taxation without representation is tyranny, and that's not me making that up. I think somebody famous white guy said that. And he didn't really like me saying that. He just walked away. I said, I know you're going to walk away. You're not that smart. So you can't tax people, and you can't give tax breaks to companies who are going, that's taxation without representation. You're taxing them to benefit somebody else, and so it makes no sense to give them tax benefits. I'm subsidizing you to give jobs away to some other country.
That's actually been the theme for Washington, D.C. for the longest, that they are taxed the same way all the other states are, but they don't get the same representation. So that's always been, I think it's Eleanor Holmes Norton who was always saying that when she was running for office, that, you know, that's the problem in D.C., taxation without representation. So I was just saying, letting you know that we hear this in many different circles, and it's absolutely correct. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's Thomas Jefferson. Taxation without representation is tyranny. Like, flat out, you cannot tax people and then not give them anything. Or they can't pay taxes. So I said, forget this. If this company is taxed at 100%, you don't have to hire any black people. Now, that's millions of dollars of subsidies that you're getting, fire department, sewage, all of that stuff. You're getting subsidized. And if you're going to discriminate, you don't get them. You pay 100% of your tax value. I don't care who you hire.
Right.
Well,
and that's not how it goes. So anyway, back to we had so many things going on the table. Never mind.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say back to Ming and his salary, $800,000. Oh, the thing I wanted to ask about that was, he can't change his citizenship?
Is he going to defect from China? Is that what you're asking?
And then that's why I said probably not, because it's communist. I just realized that. They sent him over here.
Right. But here a lot of people have defected when people let him out of the country.
Huh?
Right. So the issue is, do you defect because now you're rich, or do you defect because you think there's tyranny? And do you want to see your family for the rest of their lives? You know, just little things like that.
And also,
would
you still be allowed to play in the NBA if you defected? That'd be a whole thing.
The NBA don't care. The NBA's money. That's a private enterprise. Would you be able to work at Burger King if you defected?
Well, no.
See,
I
always say that about athletes generally. Everyone whines about they shouldn't be able to come out of high school and go into professional sports, and they should go to college. Yeah, you're essentially saying that the college should make some money off of them. But you don't care if they drop out and work at Burger King. But you do care if they get a couple million dollars, because now you're jealous because they get money because they can play basketball.
Well, the reason that I was saying that is because I would imagine that would politically, on the political arena, on the wider scene, that could cause some kind of complications between the countries, because he's gotten permission to come here, right? So if he tries to defect, you know, not saying that, anyway, that's way deeper than I wanted to go on.
But just fundamentally, people do that all the time. They get permission, they cross a border someplace, they defect. That's not, that wouldn't cause an international incident. It happens all the time.
Okay.
We would always have international incidents if that was the case.
Is he still playing?
Wouldn't that be
No,
the
he
end?
Was hurt years ago. He has bad knees.
Wouldn't that be the end of them wanting to allow players to come over here, though, for the NBA or professional sports or anything else?
How many Chinese people are in the NBA, Kathleen?
Well, I mean, that's not really the point that I was making, Jerome. I was
Yao Ming.
You know,
Jeremy Lin is from here.
He is paying $800,000 in taxes. I'm sure that those
I'm sure.
Yeah, but he, let's just say he had like a $10 million contract, which he had more than that. So he probably made like $1 million or $2 million a year. So, you know, so if he, if you had, you know, a $10 million contract, you know, you're still bringing home $2 million. Or not $2 million, but, you know, roughly.
Well, the last time I checked, airfare to China was pretty high, so that's my, that might be like 6 trips.
I know. See, that's you being American, though. It's all relative to what we think money is.
It's
right?
Six,
and so,
the one stay at a 5-star hotel, and that's his salary. He got to go back to work.
No, I'm. But think about it. I'm sure the government took care of him at home. He's
yes,
an ambassador to them, so they may have given him. You know, he may have symbolically had to pay his 80% like everybody else, but they probably gave him money to speak and to go on tours. He was on their Olympic team when they went to the Olympics a couple of times, so he went home and went to the Olympics. They probably give him ambassador luxury stuff. The country probably take care of him because he's symbolic. If they don't take care of him and they stress him, how can you keep everybody else in line if the guy who's the world figure ambassador for China is being tortured?
Mm.
So don't think of him as hurting at all. He was not probably complaining. He said it on TV. He was like, oh, yeah, we pay 80%.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I'm,
so he probably didn't have to pay for nothing when he got home. What do you need 80% for? What do you need the rest of the money for if he was staying, if he was there?
To pay taxes in America. But anyway, I just know, I was just saying, I'm just saying that you say he's not hurting. You take
so I don't know that he is or not. I'm just saying it doesn't benefit you to oppress somebody without having symbolic success.
Yes,
right?
I understand, Jerome. I'm just saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. That's me as a strategist. You can't really talk to me about why people do stuff.
I'm
sorry.
I just
had to lighten up and be a caller sometimes. Hey.
No, I'm not trying to reduce you to caller status at all. I'm just saying to you that 80% of my salary is going to give me a big fat stomach ache. I don't care about what happens to him, Yao Ming, but I'm going to have a tummy ache when they take 80% of my salary. I don't care how they treat me when I go back.
Well, you know what? They're so used to it. It's just their lifestyle. They don't even think that's a problem.
Yeah.
And they all live with their parents, because I hear them talking about it. Say, we don't even... Like, we just get money to spend at the mall. They don't, money's different for them. Their lifestyle is different. Their parents stay with them so they can take care of the kids. You know, if they have children or whatever, the parents take care of the children. They just, all they need money for is to buy electronics. That's all they need money for.
But you probably don't make it rain at the club either.
I
don't.
I'm
saying, like, I really have a lot of respect for Charles Barkley for this. Charles Barkley said, and Charles Barkley probably made over his career over probably $120 million in the NBA. But he said, when I made my first $1 million, I put it in a CD and some long-term whatever. He made something like $100,000 in interest a year, and he lived within that $100,000 of interest and never spent the principal. So throughout the NBA season, 82 games, 41 on the road, they get something like $4,000 in stipend just to travel. And he said, I live off that during basketball season. My expenses are never more than $4,000. He said, I wouldn't go out to eat. I wouldn't blow it. I wouldn't throw it away. He lived off his $4,000 times 41 during his season, and $100,000 a year. And so that kid, he said, once I realized that they would never break me, I started speaking my mind in Philadelphia. So that kid went off the rails. But he found out how to keep his money. That's all I'm saying.
How come
it's
he
like,
didn't talk Tiger Woods into acting right? Why was he out there gambling and spending money like he was out of his mind?
I know he had
the money, but still.
But they both gamble like crazy now. Like Charles Barkley does that. You know, because he still had. If you make about $100 million and you're getting interest off about $50 million, you're blowing something like $2 million a year, interest or whatever.
Yeah,
but they're not breaking them.
They could put some asphalt on some streets in Brooklyn.
probably could if they lived in Brooklyn. They're not, you know what I mean? Like, it's always relative. Like, people with money don't really look at life that way. It's like, yep, I have a foundation, I do this. They give. You know, that's why when Spike Lee did Malcolm and the studio wouldn't give him enough money, Spike Lee said, this movie is more important to black folks, so he started asking black people. Prince gave him money, told him not to tell anybody, and Spike said, nope, I am telling. So, because he said he appreciated so much, so Prince and Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson and Janet Jackson and Tracy Chapman, all of those people who gave money, Spike said, they gave money to see something produced that had value to them as black people. That was a good investment for them. So I'll never say that they shouldn't have that kind of money. You just have to appeal to whatever sensibilities that they have. Because these owners are making, believe me, the employees never make as much as the owners, so I can't imagine how much these owners are breaking in on these players.
Oh, no,
if you
I
see
believe
that
this.
Much money for
they
an employee.
They deserve every penny they get. They deserve every penny they get, they deserve, and more, in my opinion.
Yeah, because that's how much money that those leagues are bringing in. Like I said, the NCAA just signed a $5 billion deal with CBS. Do you think any college players get any money? No.
Not a penny.
Right. Your education is more important. That is the biggest piece of garbage I ever heard.
What about this guy who's some baseball player just got a $98 million deal, but I didn't hear his name. I just saw him signing the contract on his iPad. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
No, I did not. I didn't see it.
I couldn't hear his name because I was so busy watching him sign on the iPad. You know how hard it is to sign. So that can you believe that that's what fascinated me? The fact that he was signing the contract on the iPad. $98 million to throw a ball.
I know. Listen,
don't say it that way. It's what the market is. That's how much those teams are making off of these players.
Yeah, I know. Kathleen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump in since we were doing a 30-minute show and it's now 9:16. I just wanted to jump in real quick because Jerome, you brought up a really good point, and
what?
I just want to hit that one hard for like a few minutes before we close out. You brought up Spike Lee, and I've wanted to have the Spike Lee conversation on the air for like months now. The dispute between Spike Lee and Tyler Perry, and also what has come up lately, what I've seen flying around the internet, I don't know how much truth there is to it or not, with Diana Ross not returning phone calls to Tyler Perry. So I just wanted to bring up a little bit with Spike Lee and his, I don't want to say ridicule, but disapproval, or let's say, of Tyler Perry and his themes in his movies, his Madea movies, and this and that and the other. What do you all think about that? And do you have a feeling one way or another about one producer, director, actor, writer? Because they're basically, you know, they're patterning right after one another. Well, Tyler Perry is patterning right after Spike Lee in the sense that he's writing, directing, producing, acting in all of his movies. So how do you feel about the discord between the two of them and having them carry it out like this in the media?
What's the discord? I haven't heard it.
Well, Spike Lee essentially is saying that, you know, the accusation about Tyler Perry with his movies, his Madea character, that it's like slapstick, that he could find a much better way to express his craft, that he doesn't like the fact that he is, you know, buffooning and cooning and shucking and jiving and that kind of stuff.
All right, you did it. I love it. Okay, this goes back to the day you weren't here, Kathleen, and I said I was on fire that Mary J. Blige got on the radio. She didn't come on television, but she was on the radio saying that she was devastated over the commercial that she did for Burger King, that they portrayed her as a chicken, fried chicken singing, you know, whatever you want to call it, and that she was so embarrassed and so devastated that she hid under the bed for the first few days, and that people were talking about her, they were tweeting about it, they were blogging about it, and she's like, I'm not ignorant. I know what, you know, what the connotation of this is. I know what this depicts, and that's not what they that's not how they told me it was going to be portrayed. I would be portrayed as an icon, and that basically my voice would be, it would be an overdub or a drop for the commercial, for the chicken commercial, not that I would be singing about fried chicken. And I personally feel like if you want to sing about fried chicken, I don't know what your bills are, but I know that the majority of the people that are out there working, making money, they're making money. I don't want to see her debase herself or degrade herself, but I just feel like if she wanted to sing about chicken, so what? It's her voice. The very people that were talking about her would be the very people that would go right behind her back and try to get that chicken singing job and get that $2 million and pay their bills. The same thing goes for Tyler Perry. Madea's ridiculous. Madea is ridiculous. But if that's what he wants to do, and he's making a fortune, he gets box office, people enjoy it, it's ridiculous. But so is that other one. What's it called? Hangover? Hangover? What's it called? Hangover?
Yeah, the movie. The
yeah, Hangover. There's a lot of ridiculous movies. The Three Stooges, they remade that, I heard. All of those were ridiculous and slapstick. We know that it's not a great image. It's not the greatest image. But on the other hand, sometimes we just have to lighten up and not take ourselves so serious. And Tyler Perry is putting people to work. Spike Lee is not right now. I don't know how many films Spike has done lately, but Tyler Perry is cranking them out. And he's done some serious work, and he always has a message. And even in the Madea crazy movies, there's a message. If you, you know, if you're lucky enough to sit through all of them. And that's just my Ronnie opinion. But I just feel like, what are we going to always sit home and cry about? We can't look like this and we can't look like that. But the rappers could sit up and talk like the filth that they talk.
Ronnie, is that your rave for today? You're just like,
he's
like,
I hate
him. Okay, so here is my interpretation of it. And what it reminds me of is, you know, Mr. Farrakhan was kind of big about this when C. Dolores Tucker was talking about rappers and degrading women, and the rappers was like, bump you, and all of that. And Mr. Farrakhan said, listen, nobody speaks ill about that woman. You need to respect her. She put in a long fight, and your parents always want you to be better. So nobody is to say anything negative about C. Dolores Tucker. And I have a lot of respect for the minister, obviously, but it makes perfect sense to me. We always, segments of the community, want us to be our better selves, even in our filth. So it's sometimes it's good to have that conversation. Spike Lee is absolutely right. But at the same time, Ronnie is absolutely right. I'm not going to say Tyler Perry is, because that's still buffoonery. But they said that about Martin. And then once Martin came out, Fresh Prince started acting like Martin, and That's So Raven started acting like Martin, and everybody named Mama started acting like Martin, right? And so... and Martin was funny. So the point is that, yes, you like to have balance, but your elders should always call you to the carpet of appealing to your better selves. Because you are really fitting a stereotype, and white folks live off of your stereotypes. You know, Mitt Romney, I'm sorry to get this to politics again, but Mitt Romney had this, saw a picture of him, he has a sign, and with this black guy, it's on the front page of a website I saw today, and it says, on the black guy's T-shirt, it says, I am a black Republican. But on the banner that Mitt Romney wrote or has above the headquarters or whatever, it says, Black/Afro-American support Romney. You think anybody black wrote that?
No.
I know. because he got a bunch of old white guys there. That's the point. They think that they can mock black people by stereotypes. And so Spike Lee, just like the minister, just like all of us know, is that we are mocked by stereotypes because people can't see when we're playing. They don't know when we're joking. So you can't
The movie he did?
Huh?
What about that crazy movie he did?
No doubt. He was just saying that he has the power to do some other things as well.
Jerome, don't.
I don't think he was complaining that he's doing that, but I thought that was gay. I never really watched Madea because I'm like, I don't want to see no cross-dressing dude. And I don't care how funny anybody thought he was.
Jerome.
Early on. Jerome,
don't take the bait. Don't take the bait. Don't let her drag you into. Don't even ask her what she's talking about. Spike Lee consent.
What I'm saying, though, is I was saying that it's.
I'm not going to go off
okay
about
not
Spike
to
Lee.
Like it, is all I'm saying. It was okay not to like what Tyler Perry was doing.
Right.
Because some people are grown up. Spike is older now. Yeah, he didn't do things that he did when he was little.
Right.
Right?
I just,
so that's all I'm
saying.
Saying like,
you know, there's a movie industry, there's a lot of African-American actors, and he's putting them to work, you know. So that's really where I'm coming from with this. Madea is ridiculous.
Saying,
we all know it.
Right. And I'm saying it's okay for Diana Ross not to return his phone call. Who's he to make sure that just because Tyler Perry called, you should answer? That's all I'm saying is that you don't have to buy into that either. Like, it doesn't matter one way or another. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's okay for him to do it, just like it's okay for people to sing some songs I don't listen to. And I've watched a bunch of Madea by now, but before, it wasn't really that funny to me. Right? So it's never funny for me to make fun of church to begin with. And so when you make black people religious fanatics and every show was I fell off the wagon but my mama brought me back stories, those get old. I don't care how true or funny they may or may not be, but at some point they just get old. And so that's all I'm saying is that it's okay not to like them, but I don't shoot them down for that fact for anybody who enjoys them. But I've never bought one, so I've seen a bunch of bootlegs. But anywho, I didn't buy the bootleg, so I didn't support the bootleg industry per se. I just have it for reference.
We're on bootleg alert around here. We are not allowed to buy or watch or anything like that.
Right. Well, I just want to say this when it comes down to it with Tyler Perry. You know, Lionsgate gave Tyler Perry that deal, and that's not an American company. And even though that may be buffoonery to some people, it still says something about Hollywood that it does not pay black folks to put on any kind of movies that has a primarily black audience. Lionsgate is not an American company, and they actually do all of Tyler Perry's shows because it makes money, but still none of the major studios will mess with that still till the day, no matter how much Tyler Perry makes.
Why am I not following you? I don't get it. What were you saying? What's your point?
Well, the interesting thing is the racism and stuff of Hollywood that Spike talks about and says that we should be producing more. You don't see Paramount producing them out of their studios. Unless they did Eddie Murphy Coming to America, Paramount did that. And but you don't see MCA or MGM and all of these DreamWorks, Steven Spielberg's folks, or any of those guys actually filming black movies. They don't do that. It was Lionsgate, which is a British company, I think, or Australian, who actually gave Tyler Perry that deal to let him make all of those movies. American companies still won't finance black movies. Not above like $5 million probably.
Wow.
And that's why when Spike Lee, after he did Malcolm, after he did some movie, he said, I'll never have enough money to hire Denzel Washington again. They don't give them money to hire black actors of any kind of real salary. They always have to take a pay cut if they're going to be directed by black people.
Wow. Well, I know you're getting ready to wind up, so I wanted
a different light on that industry. You know, really quickly, I just want to say this as far as business is concerned with us as black folks. I just learned this story, so I feel like I need to share it because it is big to me as a computer person. You know how when you go on the web, you put in a www name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For it, for something?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So that server, www, is a government server. So the company that got the contract to create that was this black company called Network Solutions. And I think about 98 or 97, they bid the contract. They got it. So, no, actually it was earlier than that, probably like 96. And so what happened was we talk about tech companies and booms and all of this other stuff. The guy, the two guys who created Network Solutions sold the company in 1998, right, for about, I think they got something like $14 or $40 million or something. I know that's a long distance, but stay with me. They got something with a four in it, but let's just say it's $40 million. VeriSign came in and bought the company 3 years later, and they sold it for $7 billion. The two black guys fell out for years. They never talked to each other for years after that.
Wow.
Yeah. The moral of the story is white folks don't sell their companies and black folks do.
Wow.
Yeah,
I wanted
if they would have kept just a little bit of ownership in it. Like
Usher's family before we go, Kathleen.
Oh, is how's his son?
I haven't heard anything. The last thing I heard was that he was still on the life support. So I haven't heard anything. So I wanted to send a condolence out to their family because that's such a terrible tragedy. It's just unbelievable. Everybody watch yourself on the water. Be careful.
Yeah. I'm not sure how he is. I heard that he was, that he was still not conscious.
Unconscious, yeah.
Well, they said he was brain dead. I was trying to avoid saying that. But the last thing I'm seeing online right now, this was 8 hours ago from New York Daily News, is that Usher's ex, Tamika, may be forced to take their son off life support. I don't know why. She's saying that she can't afford all the medical bills, so I'm sure that story will change shortly because I don't think Usher would want that to go any further, to say that he can't afford the medical bills. But,
okay. You know what? Can I jump in on that story a little bit?
Go right ahead, because I just pulled it up, you know, this second as we were asking, so jump right in.
Okay, I just want to say this, like, very quickly. Jerome doesn't know a lot of people, just to say that for the record. But a friend of mine who's actually friends with Usher, with that little kid's grandmother, and knows the little kid, her son, a friend of mine who's really close, her son and that little kid played Pop Warner football together last year, and I knew they knew him for years. And the problem is, with this, because I spoke to her a few days ago, and she said everybody is still kind of pissed that they keep saying that that's Usher's stepson. We know it is, but the child's father is actually pretty famous himself.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of money.
Right.
So in that she couldn't afford to pay the bills, I want to say that for the record that the guy who is a designer, I can't think of what his clothing like, she knew who he was and pretty well known, that says that he has a ton of money and they have money and resources, but just because Usher's the bigger name, it seems like the burden's fallen on them for Usher for entertainment's sake, but he's not, you know, indigent or relying on Usher, and Usher only knew the kid for like 2 years before they got married, and he never even stayed with them. He pretty much stayed with his father.
You know, it's sad though.
She was saying that everybody, you know, like the family and stuff, everybody's kind of like, it's kind of getting under their skin a little bit or their nerves that they keep saying it's Usher's son without even acknowledging the father who's been taking care of him.
They did mention the father in the article that I had read about, but what I think is sad is that they had been arguing so bad, and I'm hoping that if nothing else, this will bring an end to the madness that they had going on.
Well, you know what? I want to. I thank you so much for bringing this forward, because I stand corrected. Every article that I did read said Usher's son. So now that I'm looking further, I see some places I'm looking at the same article, the same page, and under the caption it says Usher's son, and then over in a little related story it says Usher's stepson. So I thank you all for pointing that out to me, because I was not aware that this was not his son. And this will bring us to next week, because this is a big pet peeve of mine when they're talking about single moms or, you know, single parents or whatever, and they want to talk about the mother and they leave the father's name out of it, and I think that's a tragedy. So to go on and on and on and refer to this young man as Usher's stepson and not the gentleman's son is disrespectful reporting to me. I just am really disappointed. You know, even if they just want to say Usher's ex, Tamika, and talk about her, but don't eliminate this man from the articles. I mean, just come on. That's awful.
Well, no, I didn't see it. I always saw that the father's name was there, but they made it seem that the son was with his mom and Usher most of the time.
No, what I'm not talking to you guys. I'm talking about to media, period, to say, you know, to leave out the dad's name and make it like it's Usher's son. I think that's awful, you know?
Oh, yeah, I didn't hear that. That's too bad. Well, in all, what's really important is the fact that the child is, you know, I just hope that he can recover. Because I knew she didn't want to take him off of the life support. So hopefully she won't feel that she has to take him off of the life support because of the medical bills. Because, like Jerome said, nobody would force her to do that. Usher has been at the hospital with her the whole time and, you know, supporting her and everything. So I'm sure that they're not going to turn her back and say, oh, by the way, you know, you don't have money. Because she's been ranting and raving about money, and she was mad at Usher anyway because he cut off her Saks card. I think I reported that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a whole nother story. Like when, you know, that's a lifestyle issue with her, I would think.
Yeah. So the child is what's important now. So, okay, you guys.
Okay. All right. So, is everybody good? Do you have anything else you want to add?
Oh, that was it for me. I just didn't want to forget that.
Yeah. So, God bless you, young Glover, and to Usher and Tamika, you know, our prayers go out to you, and to Glover's dad, our prayers out to you as well. And maybe next week we'll be able to talk about Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes.
Oh, my God. We'll be on the radio till midnight because I don't understand the whole I'm a Scientology alien. So, Jerome, please, keep me in mind. You're going to have to help me with the Scientology alien.
Okay. I don't know what that means. Okay. I'll see what I can do.
Oh, I don't understand Scientology. I don't understand Scientology. I have no clue.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things you do not understand about it.
If you got to leave a guy that has $250 million, I mean, I don't get it. He must be terrible.
Again, it's about money. Life is not about money. When you have a lot, a burger is a burger. Whether you pay $17 for it or a dollar off the dollar menu.
Well, like that girl used to say, it may not be a lot. She said, money isn't everything, but it sure can get you. Well, she said, you can sure drive up close and have a good time. You're a lot better off with $250 million than being in the red $250.
Right. But that's why I always say when people get mad at old men who have young girls, I'm like, every guy knows that if you have money, you can buy a pretty girlfriend. And women get really mad at guys who say that, but strip clubs exist for a reason, people. And don't ever lose concept of people. You know, people work for. It's a Dave Chappelle joke. Guys only have nice stuff to attract women. They'll live in a cardboard box if people weren't paying attention to their money. They wouldn't care.
And on that note,
how Adios.
On that
good
note,
night.
We're going to say thanks for listening, everybody. It has been wonderful being with you again 7 months into 2012. Make sure you are making your dreams for this year come true. Today is July 15th, and you are listening to Ask Kathleen with my fabulous co-hosts, my beautiful sister Ronnie, and with her great Ronnie-isms, and our other co-host that we love to have here, Mr. Jerome Esprit of EspritNet Radio. And Jerome did an incredible show the other night. His After Hours show was brought over to Ask Kathleen on Thursday evening, so make sure you check that out as well. And prayerfully, Jerome will be back on a regular basis doing a program over here on Ask Kathleen. What is it, the Black on Black Crime show?
Yes, we're looking at doing a Black on Black Crime, and Black on Black Crime, really quickly, is when black people criticize other black people about things that they don't criticize white folks about. For example, nobody ever paid attention to George Bush like they paid attention to President Obama. So when a black person says, what is he doing for black people, I have to ask, what did other presidents do for black people? It's when you unfairly criticize black folks for things you won't criticize white folks for.
And I think that's
about black crime.
And that probably applies to Spike Lee, too. So Black on Black Crime will be over here on Ask Kathleen Network, and we'll let you know about the details, the time, the place, and all that other kind of stuff where you can always find Jerome and Finesse. And, Ronnie, you have to tune into that Black on Black Crime show.
We're all going to tear up.
It's going to be great. So, everybody, have a great night. Thank you both so much for being here. I love you guys, and I'll see you next week Sunday on Ask Kathleen, 8 p.m., Sunday evenings. See you then. Good night, everybody.
Good night.